recording now. So I'm recording now. We just had a crisis.
Was he frightened?
I don't know. He's gone running upstairs. My neighbor just came to the door with my dog. He'd been outside for like at least an hour. I took the bins out and I...
He's anxious at the best of times. I can only imagine this was not a very good experience for him.
Very traumatic for Stan.
When did he pee on the neighbor?
I don't know what you're talking about, Phil.
You know when he gets anxious, really anxious. Yeah.
Anyway, that's really weird. Like, I've been calling him periodically the last hour or so, because usually he'll come down, eat the rest of the yogurt in the bowl, but he didn't this morning. And then I look over there. Hey, buddy. Hi. Were you scared? Aw. Yeah, he must be a little
stobo.
He's a little freaked out. What's that?
The little stobo, like the little hobo almost.
What's stobo? Stanbo. You know, like Stan, I get it. All right. Phil put together this comedy bit. Now that you're going to be able to hear it, Fred. Phil, what's the comedy bit?
Well, I heard the beginning of the recording yesterday, and just the repetitiveness reminds me of a song from Will Smith's daughter.
Oh, the repetitiveness of my voice.
Yes.
All right. So here's Phil. As of now, we're recording. 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 Fantastic, Phil.
You said that like no less than six times. I'm like, oh my God, this reminds me of a song.
Who's the song by, Phyllis?
So it's Willow Smith.
Oh, right, right.
Whip My Hair, if you remember. You guys thought it was so annoying back in the day.
Yeah. All right. Freddy. Did you get your coffee there, bud? You're all right? You ready to
go?
Yeah,
I'm sorry. I go up there. What's Mike Keurig says, but, you know, more water, please. So it took a little longer than I thought because I had to fill the reservoir. But I'm all good, Howie. I'm all good.
M. Griner returns to our show. Can you spell her name for me? Just because I'm on a different page. Is it Griner?
Well, let's have a look here.
Return.
Griner.
Yes. Yeah, returns. After a long time. We haven't had M. Griner on the show in a very long time. Did we have her on the show more than once? I don't think so.
No, I don't either. And all as right. I mentioned on yesterday's episode, when she did appear, she sang Madonna's Holiday, and I really, really liked the version that she sang. Isn't there a dating site called Grindr?
Yes, there is, Fred. Like you don't know. Like you don't know.
I don't know.
Let me see your phone. Let me see your phone. Sit there bullshitting me. Oh, is there a website for men to seek other men called Grindr?
Apparently you swipe.
Let me see your
phone. Let me see your goddamn
What's
phone.
What's that, Phil?
Huh?
What were you going to say, Phil?
Apparently you swipe.
Yes. Yes, thank you. Thank you for pouring, you know, cold water on the fire that is this bit. All right, so what do we do? What do I mean? Something went wrong. I don't. Oh no! Are we live on Facebook, please? Because I just got an error message from Facebook.
Double checking now.
Oh man! All right, M. Griner's on the show, and don't ask her to play Holiday, okay? Because she's not here with her piano. I don't think.
I had no intention.
Well, it sounds like the kind of thing you'd do.
Or
yes, we're up. We're up.
Okay.
It's the kind of thing I would do. I had no intention of that. I might say, because the subject will probably come up. Oh, you were on our show 20 years ago. Yeah, you sang that. It was very nice. I don't think that is anywhere in her mind, a song she sang on our show 20 years ago. Figure it out.
Well, I was
hoping. It had to be 20 years ago.
Yeah, at least.
Yeah.
Did you watch any of those videos of her? Yeah, a couple of songs we're going to be playing. She's promoting. Listen, man, she's fascinating. We hope you'll stick around for the actual show, which begins with this little man.
The following episode of Humble and Fred is brought to you by the Retirement Sherpa, Gig Sky, The Chambers Plan, Health Gauge, Bowdog, and our newest sponsor, Dewar, D-U-E-R, the world's most comfortable pants. If you'd like to talk to Humble and Fred, our Twitter account is Humble Fred Radio. And now from the remote headquarters of the Humble and Fred Show, here are Humble and Fred.
As of now, we're recording. As of now, we're recording. You're the premier of the province, a member of the Conservative Party of Ontario. You've got to take your head out of your asshole. You've got to describe this situation, because when I read about it just briefly before the show, premier of the province.
Basically, yesterday, while making an announcement for a big hospital in Windsor, Essex, or something, he got on to Ontario needs workers. We have a worker shortage.
Sure, we do
in the province, and he was saying we need immigrants, but we need hardworking immigrants. We don't need immigrants who plan on coming here sitting around on the dole. We want hardworking immigrants. So as you can imagine, the shit has hit the fan.
He said on the dole too, which is such a Victorian, like that is such an antiquated phrase.
Mm-hmm. And as I said, Phil made some comments prior to the show. Maybe he can say what he said. And, I bet there's lots of hardworking immigrants here that might agree with him. But
I was saying, if you're going to be an immigrant to this country, usually in your thoughts, it's like, I should be hardworking if I'm moving to another country, right? Mm-hmm.
My wife, her first job was,
she immigrated to Canada, right?
I thought your comments about the immigrant requirements to Canada were interesting.
You kind of have to be hardworking to get here.
You were saying like you need to show a certain amount of self-support and income.
Yeah.
That you're not, when you immigrate here, wasn't your point that you were not allowed to be on the dole?
Yeah, there's a bit of ignorance when it comes to the immigration system here, because people assume that if you just do your paperwork, you'll come. Like my wife came here because by qualification, she's my wife. That's a personal relationship. But that's the only way you can bring someone here without worrying about the income level. If I wanted to bring my mother-in-law, or when my parents, when they sponsored their family to come here, they had to achieve an income level, and they had to prove it in a T4 and everything else.
Sure.
The government of Canada. So they had to be hardworking to get here.
Okay, Phil, but you've thrown me a bit of a curve, because when we started talking, what's the first thing you said to me?
Well, who could not be a hardworking immigrant? No,
you said to me part of what he said was true, Ford. And I thought,
it's true. Like, if you're the premier of the province and you make a comment like that, it makes sense. It makes sense because, an immigrant on the dole, like, it makes no sense because you have to work to qualify for a dole in the first place. Right?
Okay, whatever.
Let's say you're a newcomer to Canada and you want to get dole. How? Like, what program is there? Cannot be hardworking.
I like that we just keep calling it the dole.
Right.
What anyway, the pogey?
But I think we can all agree the bottom line is the very fact that he said that is just the height of stupidity. You're the premier of the province. Why would you even go there? What is wrong with just saying, hey, Ontario's doors are open to hardworking immigrants. Anybody that wants to come here and help us build this province, we're ready for it. Like, why would he have to add that? I guess it just says a lot, doesn't it?
And, well, that's what I said. If you're the premier of the province, at some point you have to know when the sentence is over. And saying we're looking... Listen, I've had this conversation recently with somebody about the labor shortage in the province. We saw it up north a couple of times this summer, talking to people. My buddy who lives up there can't get any work done because there's nobody to do any work.
Right.
So it is a problem, but why continue the sentence? Oh, we don't want you if you're going to come here and get on the pogey. We don't want you coming here with you playing your scratching winds. Jesus.
What that says to me is the guy running the province, speaks before he thinks, or he doesn't think out a thought the entire process, which is disturbing because you need that from the guy in charge. And listen, I know amongst, I see it here in Brampton, you stand back and you listen to people, and there's different factions of the South Asian community that don't like each other and accuse each other of all sorts of wild things. I don't know if it's true or not. You just hear this stuff. So believe me, there are immigrants that are probably going, he's right. I came here and worked hard. Why shouldn't that guy? Yeah. All that is immaterial.
Sure.
And we don't even know if that's true. bottom line, is the premier out of his fucking mind?
Okay, that's Phil, go ahead and comment, and then I'm going to comment. I have two comments on this, but you go ahead, Phil.
I was going to say that, you know, these words that Premier Ford mentioned yesterday, the way he muttered these words, it's distracting us from an actual good announcement that came from his government yesterday. He said he was going to regulate job agencies who hire temps from overseas. He wants them to be licensed now. He doesn't want people to sleep on a straw bed. That's the quote.
All right. Mm-hmm.
That was supposed to be the nice quote from yesterday.
For sure.
Yeah.
The problem with what he said, though, is that it takes away from the fact that there is a problem. As I pointed out, there really is. And the second thing it does is it makes us all uncomfortable.
Yes.
Because, as you've said, Phil, when you immigrate to this country, it's a hard thing. It ain't easy. We all went through it with you and your family for the last couple of years. It's not an easy thing to do. And what he makes it sound like is a bunch of people are coming here just sitting around sucking the government's teats.
And this is not something that was invented today. My parents, when they came here, they had talk radio shows that had people call in saying that, you know, somehow my parents are going to be on the dole. They're going to have 12 kids each. And it's like, no.
Wait,
not
a second.
In this case.
I'm confused, Fred.
Yeah.
Phil's parents hosted a talk radio show when they came here.
Yes, they did.
So there's a clip from the CBC radio archives about this woman who called into a radio station in Vancouver. And she says, like, all these boat people, they're going to come here. They're going to have 12 kids each and they won't work. And so my parents, as you guys know, 40 years in the auto industry, two kids who work, or three kids.
So wait a second. So what's your mom's name?
Song.
Song, and your dad's name?
Dung.
Song. Hey, everyone. Sorry. I was trying to play some music.
That
hey, everyone.
Like a Vietnamese talk show.
Welcome back to the talk show. I'm Sung and Ung, and it's time for Immigrant Talk.
Why are they not hardworking, okay?
Oh, that's racist. Mm. That is racist.
Now, hold on. Not. Here are people for 10 years. You're fine with that.
Phil's allowed to do that, Howard.
I'm imitating Papa.
All right. Stop that. Anyway, it's crazy. It's dumb. And let's move on.
Okay. Although I will say, and not to play whataboutism.
Yes, play that. And then we'll
sometimes it's better to say nothing because you fly under the radar. I think it's over a week now since they found gas in the water in Iqaluit. Iqaluit.
Iqaluit.
Yep. And I think a plane went up there with some bottled water, but I still haven't heard anything from the Prime Minister about that. So there's gas in the water in this indigenous community.
Yeah. Do you know?
Again, if they found gas in the water in Etobicoke today, what would happen?
No, but I was going to say, if they found gas in the water in Rosedale, there'd be no gas in the water the next day.
But I looked this morning. I still haven't really... Listen, I may have looked in the wrong places and it may be out there. But if I'm the Prime Minister, I'm there with the plane, with five planes full of water.
No, I'll tell you what. If you were the Prime Minister, you'd parachute out of one of those planes with a Brita.
Yes.
You would be there with a net full of Britas. The Prime Minister, you say, is in Kamloops. He told Chief Roseanne Casimir, the Prime Minister that his visit to the First Nation community Monday is bittersweet following his notable absence on the First Nation Day for Truth and Reconciliation. But
that was a mop-up job yesterday.
Yeah, of course. Because that's why he was not jumping out of airplanes with... water filters. He was
and for a special
busy
treat, we'll bring a soda stream.
That's right. Okay, just think about what we're talking about here, folks. Gas is in the water. Gas is in the water. And no, Phil, have you found out, is the gas still in the water?
So it still is because they store some water in a certain tank, and there might be a kerosene or gas line nearby that contaminated it. So they're checking the lining now.
All right.
But, like, it's just... it's on and on and on with this water in the indigenous communities. And this one in particular is like how there should be like army cargo planes up there full of water. Well, you know, there should
well
be.
Yeah, it doesn't make any. I mean, we're obviously we must be missing something.
Uh-huh.
Don't yeah. you think? I mean, we've talked about this a dozen times recently. What are we missing that we can't in this first mm-hmm. world country where some of our citizens are living in third world conditions?
Right.
And just because of who they are, where they are, and mm-hmm. what we have this weird relationship with those people. I say those people, you know, respectfully.
Yeah, so you
no, but you know what I mean? I'm saying it mm-hmm. anyway. You know what I mean. The relationship we have with those people who are indigenous in this country is just shameful. And the fact that we can't get them. You know, we have a program now where you can't have plastic straws. I get that. That's great. But don't you think we should get fresh water to people before we worry? So, I mean, I want to worry about both of them, but.
Mm-hmm. You know, some of the stories from that community, you know. Like babies turning a certain color. Nobody died. But people were just getting sick and they couldn't figure it out.
Because of the gas in the water.
Because gasoline in the water, which is a good thing. Jesus
Come
Christ.
On. No, but you're right.
Nothing to laugh at. I'm laughing at the you know what I mean.
No, we're both laughing at this. The situation is so ludicrous, it's actually pretty funny. It's tragically funny.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we worry about so many things, and we should. The plastic straws are a problem. Mm-hmm. But here's the thing. Where you could literally drive to a place and give them fresh water, we don't seem to be able to do that. Yes, Phil?
Well, the thing is, if you're not the Prime Minister and throwing out Brita filters, do you know how much the cost of a 24-pack of water is in Iqaluit?
Yeah, it's unbelievable.
$102.
Again, how is that possible?
$30 for a pizza.
But Howard, see, it's the transportation costs, which we understand. But this is a crisis. This and here, this is a prime minister who was elected back in 2015. A big part of his thing was indigenous. He was going to look after everything, you know, hugging Gordon Downie, making the big promises leading up to it and all that stuff. And he spent $600 million on an election that got us nowhere. And these people still sit up there without water. And it's not enough. Like, the last shipment I heard, everybody got something like 16 liters each. You know how quickly you go through 16 liters of water, a family? Like, why is there not, why on television, why in the news are we not seeing these wonderful, glorious pictures of planes landing with water for these people? Like, what's the problem?
Yeah. Well, that's why I said a minute ago, we're clearly missing something. Maybe Clement has an answer. Maybe he could give us some insight. But we're obviously too dumb to figure out why in a country as wonderful and the bounty of fresh water that we have, that a family is paying $100 for bottled water is just bizarre. And again, it's easy for us to joke about it. But the joke is, if this happened in any other community, if my kids were getting sick because there was gas in the water supply in Oakville, where they little babies grew up, that would be fixed the next day.
And where are even the bottled water companies that make ridiculous profits by sticking plastic bottles under a stream they don't pay for?
A stream? How about a tub in the back of the factory?
You know, but you know what I'm saying?
Yes,
and
then
price it ridiculously.
Yes.
I mean, people complain about a liter of gas. You know, a liter of water in a lot of stores costs more than a liter of gas. But why isn't there some association or some, you know, initiative effort between them and the government and transportation to get water up there? Like,
I know. Well,
it seems
again,
like a missed opportunity to
me. All we're doing now is asking the same questions over and over again. But, you know, you're right. There was those moments on the Hips final tour and you thought, you know, maybe Gord Downie, as he's, you know, leaving the planet, making this point, maybe he can help us all. M. Griner in the next 20 minutes. Lots of show still to go. And maybe talk a little bit about Colin Powell. The percentage of vaxxed Canadians will impress you. The numbers of COVID cases are steadily declining, not only here, but even in stupid America. And then there's a picture, I'm not sure if either of you or any of you have seen, of the guy in Starbucks with his AK-47 strapped to his back. I'm not even sure. It's funny. I can't. Well, it's an amazing picture. All of this coming up, but first let's talk a little bit about these fine folks that support this program each and every day.
Bodog.eu/sports. For all your gaming fun, and I'm serious, it's fun, you know, to be involved in professional sports. I mean, as a fan, and then be able to wager responsibly. Whether you're a sports bettor, a horse racing fan, a poker or casino player, Bodog, your number one source of online gambling entertainment, they have it all. Go to bodog.eu/sports. It's all there, all the professional sports. Let's have a look. Baseball tonight. All right, Dodgers favored over the Braves. And the Braves, they pay $156 to win. Astros and Red Sox, the Red Sox kicking ass with home runs. Unbelievable. They're favored again tonight. The Astros pay $105 to win because they're the home team. But how about those Red Sox? Aggravating. And to think the Jays were just one game behind them.
Did your... I was checking out something else while you were talking. Did the Leafs win last night?
No, the Leafs lost in overtime.
Okay. Just curious.
They're having trouble scoring goals.
Well, no, they've only got some of the best players in the league on a team.
That $40 million can't seem to score goals so far this year.
Okay. I just like to ask, just in case you're like, I'm not going to watch it.
Although I was up to 11:30 watching my Buffalo Bills.
Oh, I'm sorry. Watching what? Did the Bills win last night?
No, they lost. They have no business losing to the Tennessee Titans, but they did like 34-31. But again, bodog.eu/sports. Go there, and it's all there. If you want to, you know, throw a few dollars at a game or two.
I just don't want your blood pressure going up. Of course, if you have your health gauge on, you can see just what your blood pressure is doing. You got oxygen saturation, Phil. I don't know what you're about. Heart rate, pulse wave velocity, activity levels, calories burned. And Tim Daniels was on last week. Got very technical, but that's what you can do with the health gauge. You pair it with the app. And like I said, you know, you just whatever you can customize it to your own lifestyle and share this information with health professionals, whether you're at home or on the road. The information is always being gathered. The data is captured by the sensors and sent to the device, to the phone, to the cloud. HealthGauge.com. Use the promo code HumbleFred15 for 15% off at checkout. HealthGauge.com, 15% off using the code HumbleFred15. Here's a picture I was going to show on Thursday night.
Oh.
There. That's you and
me. I have that one. It's just right here in this room.
Is it?
Yeah.
That would be 19. Are you getting a shot of this? Because mm-hmm. I see there's some glare or whatever that is. Okay. Anyway, that's you and I, 1989, I think, or 90. That's when we first got together. We were the Sunshine Boys. Remember, did they even, mm-hmm. is the Sun even printing? Do they have a printed paper anymore?
Yeah, they still even have the Sunshine Girl.
Do they really?
Yeah.
Well, that was when you and I were desperate for attention and publicity, and we would do anything. Just go anywhere.
Howard, when the Sun was first born in the early 70s, I believe, the Toronto Telegram went under. I mean, they introduced the paper with the Sunshine Girl. It was a huge thing. And I think it was page 2, if I'm not mistaken, like right at the front of the paper and very provocative pictures. But again, it was the 70s and everybody every day. Hey, have you seen the Sunshine Girl?
Oh, yeah.
And it was a great way to open for them. And at that time, I was accepted. But now the Sunshine Girl tends to be right at the back of the paper. And, like, they have housewives and stuff. And
yeah.
Well, not necessarily in skimpy clothes and that kind of thing.
I don't think I've touched man, that was such a big part of our lives, my life. You know, reading the paper every day, the sun, the star, for sure. And that, the touch of newsprint. I haven't touched a paper copy of a newspaper for a long time. Even now, the what do they call that? Mail fill? There's a name for that.
Junk mail or...
Yeah, junk mail. It doesn't even include a lot of paper stuff anymore. You know, the odd junk mail that I still get is a bit glossy. It's usually flyers, but they're that sort of... Even the neighborhood papers aren't as prevalent as they once were, but anyway.
Can I make an observation?
I wish you would.
Prior to, you know, cell phones, your devices, if someone was... If someone witnessed someone else reading a newspaper a lot, they'd go, boy, that person's really, you know, like well-read. They reads the newspaper 2 to 3 hours a day or whatever. Now, if you read it on your phone, you can be accused of, why are you spending so much time on your phone?
No, I know.
Why are you looking at your phone so much? When you could actually, that's where I get all my news.
Yeah,
that's
of course,
where I
too.
Read my news publications. So you're doing that and it'd be like, man, you got your face on that phone a lot. Where if it was a newspaper reading the same thing, it would be, my goodness, you're well read. Just an observation.
Yeah, it's a good one.
Thank you. No,
good observation.
Mm-hmm.
And very apt and true, and we all can relate to it. That's why you're a good observer of the human condition.
Fuckity.
Here's an observation that you won't relate to. But if you have ever bought legal weed, like, I don't know, I know maybe you've bought the odd little pack of gummies, but you're not a regular user.
No, no.
But if you are a regular user, ever since legalization, and I only bring it up because it was, I think, was it 2017 or 2018 that weed was legalized, Phil? It doesn't
October
matter.
October 2017.
October. So it was October 4 years ago. And I've had this observation. In fact, I even wrote down a little observation. They have made the packaging of this product so fucking hard to open.
Mm.
It's unbelievable. And I just wonder if other people that use the products, and it's not just what you buy at the OCS, it's whatever weed products you buy in Ontario, they are so buttoned down. You know, some of the jars are not bad to open, but there's a, and I bought a couple things recently, and it's like at some point, and I get a bit frustrated. I know you'll find that hard to believe, but I do. Sometimes they get frustrated. Fred, let me ask you a question. Sometimes you get frustrated. Do you ever get frustrated?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And I know, again, you can't relate to this, but I think some people listening will, that the packaging, because I guess of the legal requirements, so that children or anyone can't, you know, an infant can't, whatever, but now it's, they made it so hard to open that I can't open it. I'm banging shit, and yeah, I'm just letting you know that it's not easy. I bought a little package.
Why do you think that is?
Well, I think it's, they make it as childproof as possible.
Oh, okay.
I think there has to be some regulations. Mm. And I'm not saying I'm working on a joke, but I was thinking of a joke. If they made alcohol this hard to open, people would revolt. Like, I'm seriously, if you were to open a six pack and it took you, I was going to say, I opened a little, there's a little plastic thing I bought the other day, and it has had little mini joints in it. And it has, I got it open once, but the levers to get this thing opened. Finally, I read the instructions. I was like, oh, you're supposed to squeeze it and then click it at the same time. But I was thinking that if they made booze this hard to unpack, there's no way alcohol drinkers would ever allow it to be that difficult. No way.
Yeah, with booze, it just gets harder to unpack the more you drink, right?
Good. Well, not yes, but even that.
Hey, you open this can?
If you're hammered, you can still go.
Yeah.
But it's funny you say that, because I tried to open this thing the other day after I'd smoked a little bit of the Mary Jane, and I found it impossible to open. Mm-hmm. Just an observation.
Some expensive scotch, too, comes, it's sealed at the top, like really, really well, so that it's not easy to sort of grab the thing and sort of unwrap it to get to the... to the cap. But I don't think that's because of children.
No, I don't think. But that's what it, I mean, that's what it must be. They've made them childproof. There's got to be some regulations around it. And it's funny, Phil, I was thinking about that the other day, that we're 4 years, I guess, since has the novelty worn off? I think for a lot of people it has. For me, it has. It's not novel anymore, but it is now just convenient. You know, I don't buy a lot of stuff. You know, whatever I have lasts me a long time. But when I want to go replace it, just like if you're heading up north for the weekend and you want to make sure you've got some beer for yourself and, of course, others, because you're very generous.
Right.
You go to it's just a you don't even think about it. You don't need to go and hook up with a guy who has the beer. You know, you just go and get it. Where I think that's what's happened to marijuana people is that it just became kind of convenient.
Speaking of beer in the province and the premier, it's now going to be legal for craft beer companies to sell their beer at local markets. You know, like out here in Caledon and, you know, these markets that are set up. Not mainstream beer. If there's any part of it that's associated with like a foreign entity, it cannot be sold. But if the craft beer is made here in Ontario, you can now sell it at local markets, which I think is... You know, slowly we're entering the 21st century with that kind of thing.
Do you ever buy your beer where you shop for food? Is that ever?
Yes, the time.
Oh, yeah. Do you do that, eh?
Yeah. Like if I'm buying my Miller Lite, like if I'm just buying like my fill the fridge, hey, do you want a beer? You know, I'll go to the beer store and buy a 2-4 of Miller Lite Tall Boys, and they're in the fridge. But if I'm shopping at Sobeys, I'll go to the thing, and I think, oh, that looks interesting. I might pick a six-pack of different beers that I might want to enjoy.
Has that become, because again, I think this all came into being after I stopped drinking. But I noticed the other day, Rachel, who likes those little... you know, gin, fizzy, tonic-y things they sell, tequila, fizzers, or whatever. They don't sell those at the Sobeys. She and I were looking, and I said, it's weird. They just sell all kinds of beer, but I don't think they sell coolers, do they?
Oh, mine does. Yeah.
Really?
I think so.
Yeah, or but there's a difference.
Oh, no, you know, beer-based coolers.
That's what I'm saying. Beer-based coolers, not gin or vodka-based.
Right. I get it.
And that's why I said to her, I said, I wonder, I guess maybe that must be just... If it's got alcohol as its, you know, ingredient.
I buy my, for the kids, I get those Radlers, but they're beer based.
The grandkids?
No, for
I know.
Mel, when she comes over.
Hey, John, do you want to split this Radler with me? It won't be long, though. Think about it. You know, you're only a few years away from having his, you know, the first beer sips with baby John.
But see, you don't buy beer in bulk at the grocery stores because they're only allowed to sell six packs, right? Yeah. And it's just cost prohibitive. If you want 24 beers, that's not the place to buy them.
So, well, that was the point I was going to make about these gin-based just whatever drinks. It's so fucking child. They treat us like children. Not that it's like, okay, you can have a beer. You can only have six of them, though. And you can't have something that's got fizzy gin in it. It's ridiculous. Meanwhile, you go to the States, you know, you can not only buy every kind of alcohol at these liquor places, you know, you can buy, heroin and shit. I don't know.
No. And in Ontario, like if Sobeys sells beer and they're open past the hours of a beer store, they're not, they can't sell you the beer. That's another sort of agreement.
Say that again. If you so it, at a certain whatever time the beer store closes,
I don't know if that's changed, but I don't think it has. They can't sell, like if they're open 24 hours, they've got to shut down the beer sales. I think when beer stores close.
What a funny little place this is.
No, I know, and it's supposed to be you call this a convenience store. I find that very inconvenient.
Thank you. So if the Sobey stays open to 10 and the beer store's not open. It really is cute. Yeah. We live in a cute little place.
Yeah.
I'll tell you what we do have, though. We have a huge amount of our citizenry that have figured it out. There are... Let me give you some numbers here. 88.21% of our population that has had at least one vaccine. 82.96, so almost 83% of Canada fully vaccinated. That's two doses. And some people are starting to get their third dose, the booster. 88.8% of the population has had a dose administered. I just think those numbers are great. And I think what it does, too, I wanted to bring this up because very often we focus on the anti-vax movement and how much noise it makes and all the idiots in it and, you know, and all the how could they be that stupid? For whatever reasons, they don't want to get vaccinated. But I saw those numbers this morning. I thought, you know, that really should be the conversation that, you know, close to 90% of the country has had at least one dose. So all this noise from anti-vaxxers, anti-vaxxers, and that anti-vax movement really is the minority. They are in the minority and will only become more in the minority as time goes on.
Jerry Agar, our buddy that we used to, you know, dabble with at News Talk 1010, in the Toronto Sun, he wrote an article exactly like that. He said he's not even a big proponent of mandates, but it's like this fringe that thinks they have some kind of a movement that's going to take over. You're crazy. It's overwhelming in this province. People are into mandates and just want to get past this thing. And the best way to do it is through vaccines. You know, Howard, ESPN, a woman reporter, Allison Williams, has left her job at the network. She was a sideline reporter, college football, nice job, high paying. And she's leaving because Disney and ESPN had put in place a COVID mandate. And I think the deadline is coming up. So she's leaving the job. And again, I just skimmed the story quickly and I thought, oh, it seems she wants to have a second child. She's a little freaked out about the vaccine. Well, she's trying to have a kid. It has something to do with fertility. They've discounted that. But you know what? I can accept that. A young woman, you know, wants to get pregnant. She doesn't quite know. I can get my head around that. I understand. Because it's a big thing in a person's life, obviously.
It's hesitancy with a logical, understandable, reasonable excuse.
And I'll even go one step further because, as she said, you know, Disney, it's all about family and everything. And apparently they're supposed to have a policy that they will consider exemptions, but they rejected hers. But anyway, so I'm thinking, yeah, I can get my head around that. Then there was a video that she had posted, and then I watched the video, and it's like, oh, okay, I get it. I'm going to continue to pray. It's in the hands of the Lord.
Right, right.
Of course. And then it's, you know, this vaccine, you take it, and it doesn't prevent getting it or the spread. And it's like, how often do these people have to be told what the vaccine does? It stops you from dying and going into the hospital. And that's well established. Anyway, after I watched the video, I thought, you know, there's more to this woman's story than meets the eye. She's talking about morals and a warning at the end of the thing saying, hey, people, it's coming. This is step one of the government wanting to control us. So when they totally control us, look back on this moment in time. It's like, oh, wow.
Well, there's a lot there. Let me just address the first part, the last part first. Do you know how silly these people are going to look through the eyes of history? Mm-hmm. Imagine being able to see some video from the Spanish flu and seeing people go, you know, there's a cure for this, but we're not taking it because we don't trust the government and the government's coming to get us. Like, there's such a lunatic fringe down there. But I wanted to focus on the positivity of this, which is just that most people have figured out that the right thing to do is the right thing to do. You know, and again, we sometimes focus too much on that fringe down there and here as well. I mean, I don't know if you saw, because you're not on Twitter, but Randy Hillier a couple of days ago, you know, spewed more of his nonsense about the government. And it's basically the same thing. He prays. There's, you know, the government can't tell us what to do. It's all just so hilariously dumb to me because the government is already telling us what to do. That's why every fucking spring we pay taxes. You know what I mean? Like, and all these people do that, and they all got vaccinated to go to school, and they're all going to get... The thing is, what I said to you a couple weeks ago, I believe, is what's going to bear the most fruit, which is the market will dictate for those people. Some of those 12% or whatever the country that's not vaccinated, when the Leafs come to town out west and they want to watch a game, or when they wanted to go on the cruise, or whatever their little personal desires are, they'll get vaccinated. Eventually, it'll only be a few percentage of the population that isn't vaccinated.
Yeah. No, I agree. It's just... This is just, you know, a thing along the way, right?
Yep.
Like, this is going to be behind us. We are going to get on the other side of COVID. And you're right. We'll look back and we'll say, remember those people? And, like, how much more proof do people need? They know, you know, and you recently, I understand, had a conversation with somebody that still is holding on. Oh, we don't know what's in it. Well, yeah, we do know what's in it.
Yeah.
You know?
And, yeah, we do.
And I would ask those people, but I didn't have, in this case, I'm too exhausted by it. Government control, again, to what end? So this, if this is government control, step one to what? Controlling us in, for what reason? What's that going to look like at the end? We're just all going to be like zombies locked away in. Like, I don't get it. Yeah. What's the end game?
You know what? And I don't think you should give, I know you're not really, but there's no more energy to give to it. There's nothing to get. You know, there's certain people. Let's take her that woman aside. But, you know,
Allison Williams.
Yeah, take her aside. But there are certain people with legitimate reasons to not get vaccinated. They're a very small percentage of the people who are, as I've mentioned, a small percentage that haven't gotten vaccinated. It's like the rest of us have just said, okay, you know, back to that conversation I had with somebody saying the vaccines aren't proven. And I said, just stop. Mm-hmm. I said, first of all, this is why I don't want to have these conversations, because just stop. I'm not smart enough to tell you what's in the fucking yogurt.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
I don't know what's, you know, when I'm one of those guys, like, even at in the golf world, when I've got a couple of people I play with that are really into the frequency of the shafts and how, you know, and I'm like, I'm not smart enough to tell you how much better that shaft is from, you know, I just don't care. I just think this works for me, and I'm going to trust the science of the guys that engineered this thing.
Look at Randy Hillier. Apparently he's a chain smoker, right? From what I understand.
Oh, super.
So when he buys a pack of cigarettes, how much of that is tax? Like, so why isn't that government control? Why is he not rejecting that? I'm not going to do that because, you know, 90% of that pack of cigarette goes to the government who's trying to control us. I'm going to quit.
Isn't he a senator?
No.
Isn't he? What MP, is he? MP. Oh, he's an MP.
Independent MPP. Was thrown out of the Conservative caucus, right, Phil?
All right. Yep. Well, yeah. Listen, guys, enough of this. Hang on a second. Enough of this talk. We got to get to somebody that's going to brighten everyone's day. She is returning to our program. Her first appearance with us. Her first appearance with us was so wonderful that she decided to come back 20 years later. I know you're looking at us like, who are those two old men that sort of seem like Humble and Fred? Please welcome back to our program the wonderfully talented and positive M. Griner. Hello.
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 My goodness, how time flies.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'm so happy to see you guys, and congrats on your 10th anniversary.
Well, thank you.
Thank you.
I'm happy to see you. I've been watching some of your music this morning. And what does that feel like every day to wake up and you look in the mirror and you go, well, first of all, I'm an amazing looking human and I'm very talented. What's that all about, M. Griner?
You're very sweet. Actually, I don't know if, you know, the viewers could see, I was just wiping some toast off my face.
Oh, and what did you have on your toast?
I had some delicious apple butter, if you must know.
Oh, the apple butter.
Nice.
Yeah, well, you're in good company because he and I often have food, not just in our faces, but on other parts.
I I have some toast. I have some toast in my pocket right now. Yep.
Wow, that's lovely.
This is true. And this is a true story. My my partner, my friend Rachel, she said to me the other day, she goes, "You eat too fast." I go, "What do you mean by that?" She goes, I said, "No." I said, "How do you know that?" She goes, "Because you have food on your back. That's how I know you eat too fast."
Right up and over his shoulder.
It just flew.
That's love.
Listen, that's not why we're here. We're here to catch up with you. You know, you don't. He and I were reminiscing about your appearance with us back when we were younger. It's funny, we were younger and we've got older, but you don't seem to have aged very much, M. Griner.
Thank you. That's very kind. I think it has to do with just denying that I've, you know, become an adult.
I know. Just,
music has that ability, right?
Mm-hmm. And again, I'm not. We talked about this before the show. I'm not going to ask you to perform it, obviously, but something you did in our studio 20 years ago has stuck with me, and Howard remembered. You did a rendition of Madonna's Holiday on the keyboard.
Okay.
And it was fabulous, and I've never forgotten that.
Oh, thank you.
But it was, I guess you've moved on from that sort of thing, but it was great.
Well, I must have done it just for you because I didn't do it ever again, I don't think.
See, there you go.
And I don't know, I take such joy in learning other people's songs.
Do you?
So, yeah, I learn so much and I also like to twist them around, as you know. Maybe it was that. Maybe you like the twisting.
It was like a little on a whim you decided to perform. You're here to talk, obviously, M. Griner, excited to be with Humble and Fred, as you can imagine, but here to talk about the healing power of singing. Actually, the title is really called The Healing Power of Singing, Raise Your Voice, Change Your Life, and then in brackets, What Touring with David Bowie, Single Parenting, and Ditching the Music Business Taught Me in 25 Easy Steps. Let's start with this. Why do you believe that singing has healing power?
Well, that's a good question. I think, first of all, there's the emotional part of it. We all feel better after we sing. We've seen it. You know, you probably feel better after you guys sing in the shower or in the car or wherever, right? So there's just that act of making sound. But then I believe that the breath is really like just a healing quality that we don't really give enough credit to as a tool, right? We breathe through the whole day. We take it for granted. But then singing pushes us to breathe in a much deeper way. And then I also believe that the voice is a mirror to your life. So, you know, when you hear people speak, I think you can kind of, well, not that you can read into what's going on in their lives, but I know that when my voice isn't strong, there's something going on. When my singing voice isn't great, there's something going on beneath that. So that's my science.
Well,
I'm sticking to it.
I just wanted to ask a follow-up because, you know, you're right about the idea that, you know, breath has become, you know, sort of the topic of the day in terms of people adopting it in meditation, but also in sports psychology. Athletes are learning the power of the breath. But what I've learned a little bit when it comes to singing is just how important breathing is to singing, much more than I think the average person realizes. That a professional singer like yourself, you think about all this stuff up here, but it's really what's happening diaphragmatically, if I might say that, that really informs how you are able to reproduce sound. And I've always wondered with someone like you, and again, we'll get into the touring part, but let me just finish this long question by saying, how much does your breath help your voice and keep it ready to be professionally used each and every day? Like, or is that something you always knew, or is that something that you came to later?
Actually, I didn't know that in the beginning. I found it out through doing vocal lessons. A big guy named Mitch, who I feature in my book prominently, sort of like an ad for his vocal coaching studio. But he really taught me. Mitch Seekins is his name. He's a vocal coach who taught me really how to tune into my power by using that breath. And even you guys, you know, on the radio, you need to be tapping into that, or else you'll wear out your voices, right? So you do it, you've been doing it for years. Like when people say, oh, I'm a terrible singer, or, you know, my voice cracks and you don't want to hear me sing and all those things that people say, I always just think, well, all you need to do is tune into your breath and it's right there. It doesn't cost anything. And if you know how to do it, you're going to be a better singer. You're going to have a more present voice.
How about this? And I think we were talking about this last week. Those performers, Mick Jagger and I think Britney Spears at the time was the top. These people that get up on stage and like the physical part of their act and they sing. Mm-hmm. What do you think of that? Do you think that there's any problem with having a voice track help you out in a situation like that? Like, how is it physically possible for them to do that?
That's a great question. And I talk about that in my book in terms of defining what kind of artist you want to be. Mm-hmm. And I think we wander around. I know I did for a while, trying to find our place, trying to mimic other people and, you know, what works for that person, what works for someone else, what's going to work for me. And I think you just sort of have to ask yourself, like, what kind of an artist do I want to be? So if like choreography and, coming down from the top of like a stadium and singing is like,
that's right. You want to come down from the rafters.
Yes.
Yeah. If that's really important to you, then, you know, sure. You can like make some adjustments in other parts of the show and people have to kind of roll with that. You know, it's I don't see Pavarotti coming down from the rafters.
Yeah, it's a different kind of performing.
No.
But let's talk a little bit about, you know, I mean, not that I'm saying that a lot of people could relate to seeing you on stage at Massey Hall, but you could sort of get your head around it. When you see these shows, as Freddie just mentioned, Jagger and Bowie when you tour, I want to get to that. I don't think any of us can relate to being on a small stage at Wembley, 60, 70,000 people, how you can project enough personality. Does that type of singing, is it different or is it all the same once you're on stage with the monitors and those funky earpieces people wear now?
That was a real adjustment for me because when I did sing background with Bowie, my gig before that, the concert that I did was like on a flatbed truck at the Forest Ontario Fall Fair. So like stepping into that role was certainly an adjustment, and also playing a stadium. Well, first of all, there's that emotional part of it where you're like, okay, I gotta be in the zone for this. But I think that it has to do, and I learned this from Bowie when we played Glastonbury, it has to do with the crowd. When the crowd is that big, it really is about the crowd. And he said that to us. He said, it's about them. It's not about us. And he said that to us in the van on the way to the show. And yes, we were in a van. And I think just tuning into that is so, that's where the energy comes from. And then it's just an exchange, right?
I think we jumped ahead a little bit. And my microphone has jumped back to the 1940s again, everyone. Hey, everyone. Oh, we're talking to M. Griner on the Colgate Comedy Hour. Don't worry about my microphone. Let's just take everyone back to what you were doing. Where were you and how David Bowie came to get your services?
I was playing some shows in New York. I had been freshly dropped from my label. So I felt kind of free. I felt like I could go anywhere and do anything. And I was playing some shows in New York and I met the rest of the band and they were looking for another backing vocalist. And I just said, yes. I didn't know anything about Bowie beyond like Let's Dance. And then that video he did with Mick Jagger with Dancing in the Streets.
Harlem Shuffle.
Yeah.
No, that was...
No, Dancing in the Streets.
Oh, Dancing, I'm sorry. Right.
And you know why you say that? Because they were the same moves.
Yes.
Okay.
Right? Probably.
Yeah, but no, you're right.
Interchangeable.
So Bowie and Jagger. So, and obviously you're a fan of Bowie at the time, but so the band hires you. And what was your first encounter with David Bowie like?
Yeah, did he not have to give it the final okay?
Well, he did at the end of the day, I think.
Okay.
But the musical director, Mark Plotty, who produced many of his records and actually produced this upcoming album that's coming out called Toy, he was really the one who decided whether I was good enough to be in the band. And so Mark brought me in, and then David heard me sing on the first day. And I remember being, like, meeting him. He was very, like, gentlemanly, but he was very casual. We were at this rehearsal studio in the meatpacking district in New York. And I think I did very badly on the first day, actually. And I just wasn't used to, like, singing background, you know. I was used to being, like, front and center. So it was an education and just kind of like, okay, well, how do harmonies fit in? And what are these songs that, like, from the 70s? But then I went up to him after the first rehearsal. I said, I'll be better tomorrow. You know, like a good Canadian girl.
I'm so, sorry, David.
That's right.
I definitely said, sorry, sorry, I'll be better tomorrow. And he was just like, oh, you're fine. And then the next day it was much better.
What's that like, interacting with like an icon like that? Because he's right near the top of the heap of rock artists. Like, that's got to be something.
Yeah, it was a real beautiful experience, actually, you know, to be freshly dropped from a big label deal, to go into something that was totally different that I never planned to do. He was really gentlemanly. He was very funny. I believe I toured with him at a time in his life when he was very happy. And I go into the book a little, in the book, I go into a little bit more about what he was like. And I'm really, really lucky that I got to glimpse that. Like, he, he didn't like run away from the band and do his own thing. He really hung with us, and he like listened to what, like he listened to my songs, and like we had.
Stop. Hang on a second. You mean like he just, once you got to know him, you said, hey, Dave, I've got some stuff. Here's my version of Madonna's Holiday.
So you had his birthday cake or he had yours?
He had mine.
Wow.
All right.
Like, that's just a big thing. Like, it really is. David Bowie shared my birthday. That's fantastic.
Well, you know what? What I learned, and I really glimpsed this later in life, when I got to see myself on stage with him at that Glastonbury concert, is just like seeing my own energy, you know, like it's, we don't all get that chance to see ourselves as a 25-year-old, like what we were doing. And it's been a real wake up call to me. And that's why I wrote the book. And that's why I focused on voice again. And that's why I'm super psyched to like make a yacht rock album, which is coming up. And, yeah, it's just, if you let things in the right way, I think they have the ability to change your life.
Have you ever heard Yacht Rock on Sirius XM?
Oh, yes.
Yeah, I love it.
I have.
Except the guy, the voice guy. I don't like that.
Yeah, the announcer.
What's that all about?
The Yacht Rock guy you're listening to.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, he's ridiculous. But we discovered it. Rachel and I discovered it a couple of summers ago, and it's our road. When we're on the road, that's what we listen to. I am, if you don't mind, I just want to, just before we leave Bowie, and again, it's not just about that. The book is called The Healing Power of Singing, and I love what it says at the end. This book is a must-have for anyone who knows they should be singing. There you go. But I want to ask about, you know, being plugged into somebody who's got very iconic songs. The audience knows the records better than you do. And what is it like when, you know, you're getting ready to go on stage, and there are just certain moments you have to have, there has to be perfection, because even the harmonies in a Bowie song would be so familiar. Mm-hmm. Is that, just two questions quickly, is that extra pressure, or, and secondly, is it become so routine after you've rehearsed it enough that you're not worried about that part in a certain song that's coming up?
Well, that's a great question. I think the perfection just came in knowing the part, but actually performing it. I don't think I was at the top of my game with my voice when I was singing with one of the biggest legends ever, because I was really learning at that time. And I know, like, I made tons of mistakes on stage. He never turned around and gave me a scowl. Like, he was just, like, it's rock and roll, right? And he really embodied that. So he just let things flow. So I think the work really came in just learning the parts, which were very complex. You know, like a lot of these songs, a lot of his songs, like Ashes to Ashes, for example, like I had to play the keyboards on that. It's not like a formulaic pop song. It's really kind of a work of art underneath it all. So that was where all the work came. And then we just let go on stage.
Well, because I'm sorry, Freddie. People should know M also played keyboard on the tour.
Mm-hmm.
Why is that? Did they not have a keyboard player?
They did. They had Mike Garston, who played on Aladdin Sane and beautiful classical jazz virtuoso, but they needed someone to do, you know, like the horns and Let's Dance, which I was thrilled to do, and the and the pads and Ashes to Ashes and other things like that. And David was kind of like a dad about things, you know, like we'd roll this little Yamaha keyboard in and he'd go, like he'd see it in front of me and he'd go, "That looks so cool." And I'm just inside going, "Really? Okay." But I was really happy to bring that part of my musicality to it.
Wow. To actually being part of those big smash hits, again, that had to be a thrill. Did David Bowie ever say something to you like, "Hey, Em, meet my friend Paul McCartney," or "Meet my friend Mick Jagger"? Did you get to hang with anybody else?
Yeah, I mean, that was one thing that I did love about being around him, because everywhere he'd go, you know, you'd turn around, there'd be Annie Lennox, there'd be Mick Jagger, like, dancing at one of his shows.
Jesus.
And I think that there wasn't ever like, "Hey, meet my friend," .. But just the fact that they were around, like, it was no big deal. It was really surreal.
Yeah.
And I loved that. It wasn't like people weren't all, I don't know, it was just really comfortable. It was as comfortable as this. And,
Well, a lot of times we get compared to people like Bowie and Jagger. We don't let it go to our heads. And don't panic.
Let's see some moves this morning.
Oh, man. Listen, this is as much movement as we can, you know, muster.
I was once compared to Mel Torme. That's
true.
Extent.
Oh, that's
the extent for me.
Yep. He's the golden fog from Brampton. I want to talk a little bit about Chris Hadfield, who made such an impact with this video, playing guitar from space or however. Can you just explain how that came about and what the technical kind of aspects of teaching an astronaut to play this song?
Oh, well, that's really sweet. I didn't teach him. He really did know how to play this, but he asked me for help to collaborate with him, which was such a thrill, like, to get a call from space, you know. It's Chris Hadfield calling from space.
Calling from space.
Yeah, then it would sound like that other microphone you had there.
And this is Chris Hadfield calling from the 1940s or space.
Oh, my gosh, that's funny. Anyway, he wanted to do Space Oddity, and I tried to talk him out of it and tried to get him to do like some more indie type song.
Oh, really?
Yeah, but he wanted to do the song. He wanted to change the lyrics because the astronaut dies in the original, so he didn't want that.
Of course.
That's right.
Hang on a sec. My child is calling.
It's okay.
That's okay.
How old is your baby?
They're 9 and 11 now.
Wow.
So anyway, you know, we collaborated. I played my keyboard here in Ontario. He sang onto an iPad, and it was GarageBand. So no expense spared for NASA. And he sang in his little bunk. He closed the door and sang. And I just thought it was so beautiful. And he sent back his vocal. We built the track. And it was, again, just like, let's see how this goes. And it turned out to be the first music video in space and hundreds of millions of views and just beautiful, right? It was a beautiful experience.
Yeah, that's the word, boy, I'll tell you.
Yeah, it was something else.
Yeah, fantastic.
You said hundreds of millions of people. Again, I know I keep bringing this back to David Bowie and being a backup singer in the band. Can I ask you, don't need to give me numbers, but do you make money doing that? Does the band who backs up David Bowie on the road playing big stadiums, is that a money making thing, or is it just pay okay?
It paid really well, for sure, and that's surreal because you're like, wow, I'm getting paid this amount of money to do this. What? But that sets a standard. It sort of sets a stage. I think if you really want to make money at music, you just have to kind of decide that you can. But if you're wallowing in that, like, struggling artist mode, that's kind of what's going to happen. And with the Space Oddity thing, none of us, like Joe Corcoran, who made the drums and bass and the guitars for the track, and myself, we weren't in that for money. It was just like, let's make some music with this awesome guy in space. And then, you know, later it's made some money for us. But, like, I think also following your joy brings in the money if that's what you would like to have happen as well. And but yeah, no one knew what was going to happen with that, and we just went in for the love of it.
Well, like anything in the arts, right? You follow your passion, and if the money comes, great. Mm-hmm. If it doesn't, you still had an experience.
Yeah, you know, I think there's something so worthwhile about following that.
Yeah, you know, Fred, M. Griner's here, as you can see, but I don't know if you realize M. Griner is our Gig Sky guest of the day. That's right, our Gig Sky M. Mm-hmm. It's a big deal around here. If you don't mind, I could just mention that Gig Sky's latest service offer includes mobile data while flying, Fred and M. When traveling on selected airlines and routes, you can get a mobile data. You get mobile data by going to gigsky.com/aeromobile to see the list of partner airlines. Look at that. Was that Michael McDonald? Oh, my God.
He's getting in on the Gig Sky promo.
Because of Yacht Rock. Michael McDonald is on.
You can see where this is going.
Every second song.
Every other song is him on Yacht Rock.
It's either a Michael McDonald song or him singing with Kenny Loggins or him singing. Right. It's funny. He's on... he's on This Is It. He's on Peg by Steely Dan. Got very excited. Download the Gig Sky app for Android or iOS and get affordable data coverage in over 190 countries worldwide. Enter the code HF2021 for $5 off your first plan or visit gigsky.com for more information. All right. Here, I'm going to play a little This Is It. Oh, yeah. This is so hilarious. Here's a little Kenny Loggins for you. Spend time
in my life. I love this song when it was current. Just loved it.
And it's funny because until we started listening to Yacht Rock, you don't realize how many 70s songs. It's like it's almost like Michael McDonald was just hanging around every studio. And they'd say, hey, Mike, just come on in here for a second and just do the thing on the chorus.
Have you ever heard Sailing by Christopher Cross on Yacht Rock?
Yes, of course.
Yes. Love that song.
Yeah, that's right. Is he on there, Michael McDonald?
No. He stepped away from that
song. Oh, he did? He was busy that day?
No, isn't that Sailing is such a mood song? Like, it's just beautiful. Like, you're by the lake. It doesn't need to be an ocean or any water. It's amazing.
So on your Yacht Rock album, Em, if that's in fact what you're doing, what songs would be on there?
Oh, gosh. It's just going to evoke the same vibe.
Nice.
As the Loggins and Christopher Cross and Michael McDonald. Like, it's just about
hang on. Vibe. Here comes Michael. This is my favorite part when the piano does this part. Stand up and fight. This is it. Yeah, man.
This day's going great. See what is this? How it makes you feel?
Yeah, exactly.
This is what, like 1979? That's
Something like that.
Yeah.
Timeless. It's timeless.
Yeah. I worked briefly before I got fired my last time in radio. The joke about Freddie and I is we went from radio guys, we went a long time without getting fired. Like, we went like 25 years in our careers without getting fired. And then when it happened once and people couldn't stop firing us, it was like they just became addicted. But the last time I worked at that station in Toronto, Boom 97.3, and this is all we played. It's like, here's Kenny, here's Michael McDonald. Some great songs. That early 70s Carole King stuff was amazing.
I'm going to get my kids to school.
Okay.
But this has been so amazing.
All right. We're going to let you go. You're amazing. You're a very nice person. Thanks for hanging out with us again. We want everyone to know that Em's got a book called The Healing Power of Singing and then a whole bunch of words after that. Her her band, is it Trapper?
Well, Trapper's not doing a whole lot, but I work with Sean Kelly a lot. He's an amazing guitar player. So doing stuff with Sean, making the Yacht Rock album.
When your album is ready, please don't make it. First of all, we can't have you go another 20 years without doing our show because Fred and I will be dead. So, true. It's just true. We're on the back nine here, Em. But here's when that Yacht Rock album is ready, could you come on and maybe perform a song? And that would be so cool, man.
It would.
Guaranteed.
All right. Thank you, Em Griner. It's great seeing you.
Thank you. Have a great day.
Thanks, Em.
You have a great day. She's a very nice person, Em Griner, obviously. Here's a little Em Griner and something called Winter Long.
And I forgot to ask her one of the most important questions of all.
Which is what? If anyone in BC knows her?
No. Now, M, is that Emma or Emily short for, you know, is M short for Emma or Emily or, you know?
Yeah, quick, get her back like on. That.
Yeah. Yeah, let's get her back on.
Get her back on. She should start with, huh?
That question begged to be asked.
She's very talented, man. Mm-hmm. And, it says here she toured with Bowie, but appears as a vocalist and keyboardist on the albums Bowie at the Beeb and Glastonbury 2000. I guess those are live albums, I'm guessing. Yeah.
You know, Howard, there's different levels of celebrity. Again, the most famous person, and we've talked about this before, I've interacted with was probably Robert Duvall. Although there's been some music, I don't know, it's hard, but anyway, David Bowie, like that's right near the top of the heap, whether you like him or not. He's just so valued in the quality and the fame and the product. It's to be able to work with somebody like that and interact with them, like I actually have a conversation. That's what always blows my mind.
Well, I mean, M. Griner at the time that she would have, you know, in that period mm-hmm. of her life was a pretty solid professional touring musician. Yeah. Like yeah. it wasn't like she got plucked out of a coffee house.
Oh, but still, yeah, I get that.
But mm-hmm. still, that's mm-hmm. why I asked her about, you know, the pressure or you. What's it like where you go from like I'm, you know, again, when I watch somebody at Massey Hall, you can sort of get your head around it. I've stood on a stage that big before, but I've never stood on a stage in front of 80,000 people and tried to entertain them. It must be just a mind-blowing experience, but she's very professional. You can tell. She's mm-hmm. very good.
Like, we've had a conversation with Dave Grohl. Yeah. We've had a conversation with, you know, Chris Martin. You know, Grohl may be approaching, but, you know, I'm talking
but
out
it's
of
in
school
that,
now.
It's in that.
Getting there, but when we did it, he wasn't. He wasn't. You know what I mean?
But, yeah, I mean, yeah. I'll be honest with you, too. I was never the biggest David Bowie fan. I became more of a fan as I got older, right. But in the 70s, I wasn't. You know, when I was mm-hmm. playing top 40, I always thought, you know, I played top 40 music the first 3 years I was a radio guy. It wasn't until I got to CFOX in Vancouver mm-hmm. that I ever started playing album cuts and appreciating that there was other things beside the 3.5 minute, you know, mm-hmm. song. But, you go ahead.
We mentioned Sirius XM2. Right now, they have a Coldplay station on.
Yes.
And I like Coldplay, but that's too much for me. Like
I'm the same.
I tuned in a bit and I thought, I don't want to hear a concert from Baltimore, a Coldplay concert from Baltimore 6 years ago. It's just not, you know, I really like Coldplay, but
yeah.
they're not of that level that I'm going to sit there and listen to the Coldplay.
I'll be honest
station.
With you with the same with Billy Joel. Like I like Billy yeah. Joel, but I can't listen to song after song. Before mm-hmm. we get to H9V BDZ's news, H9B, hey, Phil. Phil, our news guy now is he's changed his name to H9V BDZ. H9B BDZ.
He's got humble news.
That's right. So, Phil, I want a new jingle for H9V BDZ. Is the weatherman and the anchorman. Before we get to H9, Fred, let's talk a little bit about the fine folks at
the Chamber's Plan. Chamber of Commerce Group Insurance Plan. We've talked about this for years. Come on, get on it. If you have a small business, this is Canada's number one group benefits plan for small business. Go to chamberplan.ca. I mean, there's so many aspects of this. I could be talking about it all day. But if you have a small business, you have people that you value, and you want them to feel the security, go to chamberplan.ca today. Get a free quote. The coverage is very, very wide. And again, you know, you put the parameters of your business in. They give you a price and you can buy into a certain levels. It really works for small business. 30,000 Canadian businesses part of this. They've been around for 40 years. It really is a clever concept, and it means a small business like yours can have coverage wider than you think. Chamberplan.ca.
Here's little M. Griner playing on Changes live in Glastonbury 2000. M. Griner's on this song, just on our show now on this song. Do you understand? Show?
Yeah, I understand. Yeah.
This isn't M. Griner. That's David Bowie.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Okay. To take that test. To try to test. Woo, try to test. Didn't want to have to be a better man. But That's her saying, turn and face the strange, Fred. That's Em Griner.
Like, really? What's it like for, you know, a kid from Ontario? You're on the stage in these huge songs. You're actually part of it being heard. It's got to be such a thrill.
Yeah, it's crazy. You know, you and I can go back and listen to a show we did in 2000. It's like, oh, great. Young men doing fart humor. Meanwhile, she's listening to hers singing backup on Changes. By the way, before I forget, I want to mention just how comfortable I feel wearing my Doer pants. They call them the world's most comfortable pants for men and women. Do you know why? Because they are. You can't just say they are. You can't go, oh, these are the world's most comfortable pants and have them not be. I'm now on my second pair. You know, I've got my denim relaxed. You've got the no pant, the no sweat pant slims. I've seen them. Phil, we have a giant pair for you. Giant pair. The no sweat joggers and so much. I got the, it's called Live Free Adventure Pant for when I'm going to Italy, right? Because that's an adventure. I plan to live free. Go to doer.ca and put in the promo code HumbleAndFred15 for 15% off at checkout. Doer, as you can see behind me, the official sponsor of the 10th anniversary broadcast. DUER.ca. Go check out the entire collection and get 15 points off using the promo code HumbleAndFred15. Yeah, it must be weird for her. Once in a while, she'll just go back and listen to this and go, oh, yeah, there. I was on that song singing Changes.
Although she had a little Humble and Fred luck with this, eh?
How so?
Bowie up and died. So she can't do
well,
it.
I don't think it was her fault.
No, I'm just saying, right?
I know what you're
just
saying.
It's around, like, you know, look what we've been through.
Everyone, oh, yeah, it's terrible.
Sort of, you know, latch on to somebody you've known and they up and die. And this is what it seems to have happened to her.
Okay. Well, you know, I'll go with that. But we don't know if she was. I think she left the band many years before he died.
Okay. Wreck my bit.
Oh, sorry. I'll wreck my bit with the facts. Hey,
Bits don't need facts. You know that.
All right. Okay.
You're right.
You do so many bits. I can't distinguish. Everything is a bit with you. Never take anything serious. So H9V, you're in your new place there. Look at that.
Hey, yeah.
Thank
it
you.
Looks nice.
Yeah.
Can you see the lake from that window?
That window over there?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Isn't that
yeah,
wonderful?
Like, yeah.
I think it's interesting with cottage decor. It's like, you know, they're really, I think, again, I'm not very good with this stuff, but I would think cottage decor would be easier than regular decor because all you have to do is throw up some paddles on the wall. Like, there's three walls. I can see paddles on two of them and some old skis.
Yeah. The water skis. Look at that.
Yes. Isn't that cool?
Yeah.
Dan, how many Live, Love, Life, Laugh posters are there?
I haven't looked around here. There's none of those.
Yeah.
There's.
Do you have any do you have any signs that say it's Doc O'Clock at some anywhere?
No, none here. There's none of it. There's some, you know, sandbags that say Love Lakes or something
right,
like that.
Right, right. Lake
Love
Life.
Love Lake Life, yeah.
Yeah, who did we have on the show yesterday? Darwin? No, Jeff. Jeff and I. Jeff Patterson. Jeff Patterson.
Jeff.
I was about to call you Jeff. So Jeff Patterson right. and I were on Joe Tilly's show yesterday. And Joe lives on a lake. He had a Lake Life pillow right behind him.
But that's Lake Ontario. I didn't want to say anything, but I don't think a pillow that says Lake Life applies to Lake Ontario.
I don't know.
It's just a big, huge body of water. I don't know.
I disagree. I'll tell you why. Because where I was last month in Kingston, that road along between Kingston and Bath, where all those people live against the lake, that's Lake Life there, buddy.
But aren't those little inlets? Like,
I don't know.
Don't you say Inlet Life, then?
Yeah.
I don't know.
It's Inlet O'Clock somewhere.
Bathtub Life.
Yeah, one of
Dan,
the...
Dan, it was the first night in your new bed. How was it? Did you
sleep? Oh, it was awesome, yeah. Yeah, it was very, did very you, good sleep.
Did what? You, you know,
oh, here we
break
go.
It? Did
we
you
go.
Break it in?
That's just the first night.
I know, but you got to break it in. I'm not just, maybe you were just on your own. Did you try and make love to one of the pillows?
Oh, you're so freaking immature.
Yeah.
I know. H9, come on. It's not you. It's H9.
By the way, so people know what Howard's talking about, is that I updated my Zoom recently and it reset the name to a random H9 something or other. Yeah. So, yeah, that's,
you know,
only on
Facebook. You know what's cute about that? You think that's what people are wondering about. What they're really wondering about is, did or did you not make love to your new bed? All right. I guess we're all done with this. Fine.
You know Dan does not dabble in that stuff, Howard.
I'm sorry, he doesn't do what?
He steers clear of that kind of stuff. You know that. You know?
Yeah, that's why I was doing the bit, okay? Why don't you just take a shit on... Is this take a shit on each other's bit day? Shit bit.
And around the Anchorman comes, as for credentials, he has none. Can't tell a headline from his bum, but his voice is nice and low. Dan Duran, the Anchorman's here. He's prone to falling off his chair, but he's got a big wang, so he don't care, and his voice is nice and low.
My voice H9VBDZ. H9VBDZ, the automated news robot. And now with the news, here's H9.
Today is National Seafood Bisque Day. To celebrate, figure out what makes a bisque a bisque, and then eat it. Rap dude Kanye West finally got his new name approved. It is spelt Y-E. He will now simply be known as Ye. No middle name, no last name, just Ye. Kanye gave personal reasons for the name change to Los Angeles Superior Court Judge Michelle Williams, and she gave Ye the okay. Now, I wasn't exactly sure how to pronounce Ye, so I went to a friend who knows such things for a pronunciation guide.
Ye! Ye! Ye!
I know who that is.
Come on, ye! 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 Ye!
Jesus.
Come on, ye! Come on, ye!
You know how many times I've heard that on a golf course?
Oh, Jesus.
I'm not really sure Kanye thought that one through.
Come on, ye! All right.
Yeah. Whenever that guy sculls one over a green, it's, come on, ye! That's what you hear.
Does he really?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, that's fucking funny. And now with more news, here's H9 BBDZ.
Ted Cruz of the great state of Texas is pissing people off again. This time it's the Australians. Australia's Northern Territory rolled out a new vaccine mandate last week, which requires workers who interact with the public to be fully vaccinated by December 24th or face a $5,000 fine. So Ted, he came out with this tweet. I love the Aussies. Their history of rugged independence is legendary. I've always said Australia is a Texas of the Pacific. The COVID tyranny of their current government is disgraceful and sad. Individual liberty matters. I stand with the people of Australia. Anyway. I
fucking hate that guy. Yeah.
I bet you Australians just love hearing that. It's the Texas of the Pacific or whatever he said. I think not.
Michael Gunner, the chief minister of the region, he responded with this tweet. I can't do the Australian accent, but imagine.
How about that?
What's that, Phil?
How about that?
You know, okay, thank you, Phil.
Hey, at Ted Cruz, good day from the Northern Territory in Australia. Here are some facts. Nearly 70,000 Texans have tragically died from COVID. There have been zero deaths in the territory. Did you know that? Vaccination is so important here because we have vulnerable communities and the oldest continuous living culture on the planet to protect. Did you know that? We've done whatever it takes to protect the territory. That's kept us safe and free. We have been in lockdown for just 8 days in 18 months. Our businesses and schools are all open. Did you know that? We don't need your lectures. Thanks, mate. You know nothing about us. And if you stand against a life-saving vaccine, then you are sure as hell... Well, then you sure as hell don't stand with Australia.
No. See, the thing about it, that's a great follow-up, Dan. I mean, HB.
Yeah.
H9. The thing H9. Is, that response will never get the light of day. No one will ever hear it. It'll just be Ted Cruz, blah, 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 Australia, independence, Jesus, suck him a dicky. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just, it doesn't matter anymore. Truth doesn't matter anymore.
Yeah, it's out the window.
Well, can you imagine if he uttered the words, you know, Ontario, it's the Texas of Canada. Fuck you, yeah. Brother. Like, where do you get off saying that?
You know what I think we need? I think we need a little Michael McDonald coming up with you. I know Dan knows this song, so does Fred.
Mm-hmm.
But the... This was one of those ones where I didn't know it was Michael McDonald when this song was popular, but now years later, they all these videos deconstructing the making of this album, and Michael McDonald talks about how hard it was to sing the chorus. And then when you listen to it, and Dan's a very good singer, by the way, but you hear the chord that he made, like he kept vocalizing with himself, you know, recording against it, whatever that is, harmonizing with yourself,
overdubbing.
Thank you.
Yeah.
So in the chorus, you'll hear how many stacked vocal things there are. Michael McDonald, it's all him. So here comes the chorus for you people. I know I love you better. Hey, come back. That's all Michael McDonald doing that one chord. It's crazy. And if you get a chance to look this up, if you're a Steely Dan fan like myself, they show Fagan and Becker are walking through the album, and they show Michael McDonald's isolated, like, vocal tracks. Say what you want about how cheesy the guy is, but it's pretty, pretty amazing.
Yeah. The hardest part about that when you listen to it is that when, like with anything, when you're overdubbing, you have to hit the note at the exact same time you hit the note the last time, right? So every single time, like probably like 10 overdubs or something that he was doing with that. And just to hit it every single time is just super hard to do. Because you'll get a stagger, right?
And Dan, so you could maybe
go back and do it again.
And talk about this, how subtle the differences between each track are. It's amazing that... Anyway, I've never understood. I don't have a good enough ear.
Peg, that would date back to what?
70s.
1980?
77 album from... Asia.
Yeah. And the equipment at the time isn't what it is now either.
No.
Right?
That was all tape. Yeah, it was a multi-track recorder.
Because you've schooled us, too, on I'm Not in Love by 10cc and how impressive that production is. But that's for another time. But listen to that. You know, I'm Not in Love, 10cc, with a good headset. And then keeping in mind what you said about it, it really is an experience.
That this is all just guys backing track.
Yeah. Fantastic.
This noise that they make. What is that?
Oh, that was notices on my computer.
Dan Duran's news today brought to you by H9VBDZ for all your
H9V needs.
All your H9V.
You know, as a special treat, maybe Dan's news can be a presentation of the retirement Sherpa.
I love that. Why don't you tell us a little bit of... Yeah, you Sherpas. Well, Sherpas.
Tim is a portfolio manager. Raymond James, a member of the Canadian Investors Protection Fund. Tomorrow is Wednesday. Tim will be by with more information on how to build wealth. We all want to do that. Whether you have an existing portfolio, you want someone to have a second look at it, or you want to build from scratch, Tim is the guy to talk to. I mean, he has a great track record with Humble and Fred listeners. It really is miraculous. In fact, he told us last week he added a couple more. Fantastic. Word of mouth. The word of mouth on Tim is great because he's such a wonderful man. Tim Niblett, the Retirement Sherpa, retirementsherpa.ca.
Okay, this is the perfect opportunity because I've been saving this bit for, like, I guess the third or fourth show in a row where I was like, oh, I don't know if these guys have seen this.
Can't wait.
All right, calm down. I know you're not on Twitter because you don't do social media because you're better than everybody. But
is that your smart sounding voice?
No,
that's your popular voice.
No, I'm dumb voice. Yeah, so Fred's so much better than everybody. He doesn't do social media. But there was this thread, and I'm not going to do all 500 of them, but it's pretty funny. There's this comedian who went to the trouble. Because I guess recently Rolling Stone did the 500 best rock songs or whatever. So he goes, okay, I'll list Rolling Stone's 500 worst albums. And the thread is really funny. But, you know, it starts off sort of innocently enough. 500 Moondance, Van Morrison. And then it goes on, 496 Songs to Fuck To, Leonard Cohen. number 491. Now that's what I call recording my neighbors having sex. 12 various artists, and it goes on and on. Jesus, you're fired. Ben Folds 4. Accidental butt dials. Sir Mix-a-Lot, and it just he does the whole 500. And it's impressive just in the fact that someone would go to the.
The trouble,
right?
Yeah.
Anyway, I just think some of the a boy named Sue You for Slander, the pretzel lawyer singers. go have a look at it on social media for those people that are still, you know. Anyway. Spell check. Def Leppard. That's spelled D-E-F Leppard, which I think is funny. Anyway, it's more of a, you know, it's more of a social media bit.
Yeah, spend some time with that thing.
Wow. Yeah. How many tweets did it take to do 500?
I don't know. 500 different, I don't know. Starting.
Call me crazy, but I think I'd lose interest after about 20.
No, you wouldn't. Anyway, have a look at it. If you're on social media, the guy's name is Blaine Kapach. I just love that music to fuck by Leonard Cohen. Dan Duran, what do you have to say about your new abode? Is it nice? Do you like it? Are the people nice? Have you met your neighbors? Have you brought over a pie to the neighbors yet?
Funny enough, did meet the neighbors. They were just leaving. So I showed up there in the driveway and said hello. A nice couple from Toronto that have, decided to go home for bunch of weeks, so I don't know. I'm going to be guarding their place. I don't know any of what's gone on the other side. I can't see it. It's a forest.
Oh, so the neighbors, like, you actually have neighbors, and they said, hey, could you watch our... Nice to meet you. Could you watch our place for us?
No. I'm, you know, it's sort of like a keep... Well, you know, somehow the discussion came up, but I don't know. Not really, but sort of, you know. Nice. I just introduced myself so they wouldn't think that I was, you know, just wandering around.
Howard, this is the country where you wave at people you don't even know when you're in a boat. So when you're leaving, it's sort of an unwritten thing. You're leaving, yeah, keep an eye on your place. Those words don't even need to be spoken. It's just assumed.
Yeah.
That's the culture.
Can you imagine, though? That's
the culture.
Those people, as they were leaving, this fellow comes over, and one of the people is like, Jesus, I think that's Dan fucking Duran right there. The guy's like, no. No way.
Isn't that the guy we've seen in about 450 movies? Yeah.
And you came over and went, hi, nice to meet you. And they said, oh, we're Lori and Dawn. And you're like, I'm H9VBDZ. Pleasure to meet you. Pleased to meet you. Oh, well, you look a lot like Dan Duran. Oh, no. H9, don't play that. Bullshit. All right. Well, listen, H9, good talking to you. We can... tomorrow you can come on even a little earlier because it's just going to be Freddie and I riding free and strong.
Oh, free and strong.
Free and strong tomorrow. And strong. Yeah. Just us.
Okay, we'll see you then.
Okay, Ben.
Okay.
We didn't... You said off the top of the show, Howard, the death of Colin Powell.
Yeah. Do we want to do that? We can do that tomorrow.
We can do that tomorrow. I mean, I have two things. Like, who names their kid Colin? Again, we...
Yeah, no kidding.
And secondly, Jeff Merrick comes to mind, and we'll...
Would Jeff Merrick named him Colin?
No. Jeff was the one that you know, after the big news conference about weapons of mass destruction.
Oh, yeah, yeah, you brought that up recently. Yeah.
He said, that's all bullshit. That's all bullshit.
And he was right. He was totally right. Yeah, the same people that named their kid Colin are the same people that the Hunt family who named their kid Mike.
That's right, Adam.
Fucking true story. Bottles and cans, just clap
your hands, just clap your hands. This episode of H9V, BBZ, and Friends is brought to you by the Retirement Sherpa, Gig Sky, the Chambers Plan, Health Game, Bodog, and our newest sponsor, Doer, D-E-R, the world's most comfortable pants. We stream to the planet from the remote headquarters of the Humble and Fred Show. More Humble and Fred tomorrow and online at humbleandfred.com.
That was a good drum break. Pick yourself up off the side of the road with the elevator balls and you